Chapter 4 Kings Park Shopping Center sat at the intersection of Braddock Road and Rolling Road in a part of Fairfax County, Virginia, that had been deformed and defined by urban sprawl. It anchored the western end of a 60s-era housing development that was named, obviously enough, Kings Park. Jonathan sat in the shotgun seat of the Batmobile, watching rats frolic around the dumpsters behind the supermarket that anchored the strip mall.
I tell myself that just because those nasty bastards scamper around outside doesn't mean that they can actually get inside.
I got a .22 in the safe if you want to do a little plinking, Boxer said from behind the wheel. What do you say, gunslinger? Ready for another breakfast?
Think of all the snakes they're keeping away, Gale said from the back. And for those keeping track of such things, it's almost 8 o'clock.
She'll be here, Jonathan insisted.
Boxers asked,
What's the home run here, boss?
I figure if anyone has the ability to pull important strings, it'll be her, Jonathan said. A home run would be her opening up a federal manhunt for Ryder and Jeffrey Kendall.
As he spoke, a white light bloomed on the far side of the grocery store and danced against the dumpsters and the woods behind. As the light beams grew larger, they were joined by others until, finally, the first set of headlights made the right turn toward the Batmobile. The approaching vehicle, a ubiquitous official black Suburban, lit up the blue lights on its grill. Two more Suburbans followed the first, forming a straight line, nose to tail, about 20 feet ahead and on the left.
What happens next? Gale asked.
The director never walks to anyone, Jonathan said with a smile. Supplicants all walk to her.
He reached for the passenger side door.
What do you want us to do?
Boxers asked.
Unless you've got pressing business elsewhere, I'd like you to wait for me till I get back.
I meant, do you want me to come along?
Jonathan pulled the handle on his door and pushed it open. Despite the heavy armor and bulletproof windows, it moved as if it weighed nothing.
No, I want to do this one as a solo. Thanks for the offer, though.
Jonathan appreciated that Boxers never liked to break up the team, even for conversations such as this one. But Jonathan didn't want to argue. He climbed out and closed the door. As he stepped out of the Batmobile, Jonathan pulled a gold FBI badge from the front pocket of his jeans and clipped it to his belt. As he crossed into the open, he kept his hands angled away from his sides and his fingers splayed. He paused at the left front fender and waited for instructions. Security details in general were a jumpy lot. Given recent events in which one of their kind betrayed Wolverine and paid a heavy price as a result, he thought that an extra layer of caution was not out of order. After only a few seconds, the passenger in the lead car exited his vehicle and walked toward Jonathan.
"What's your name, sir?"
"Special Agent Neil Bonner,"
Jonathan said. He produced a set of credentials from his back pocket and held them out to be examined.
"I believe Director Rivers is here to see me, or maybe the other way around."
The security guy took the credentials and examined them closely. He shifted his eyes a couple of times from the creds to Jonathan's face to assess the match.
"Is there a problem?"
Jonathan asked. The guard snapped the creds case closed and handed it back, saying,
"Follow me."
He led the way to the back door of the second car, driver's side. He rapped twice and the electric locks clicked. As he pulled the door open, the guard peeked inside.
"Agent Bonner to see you, ma'am."
Jonathan heard the familiar voice but couldn't quite pick out the words. The guard stepped aside, and there she was. Jonathan had always thought Irene Rivers to be a sexy, nice-looking woman, though television cameras hated her.
Yes, she had a hard side to her, but she'd been a door crasher for the hostage rescue team during her days in the field, and now she ran the premier crime investigation agency on the planet. As far as Jonathan was concerned, all those action scars, both internal and external, only made her more attractive. This morning she was dressed for business in a gray-on-charcoal pantsuit. As always the case, she was surrounded by stacks of paper.
"Good morning, Director Rivers," Jonathan said.
"Good morning." She pulled her reading glasses away and pointed to the seat facing her kitty-corner behind the driver. "Make yourself comfortable." As Jonathan sat and the door closed, Irene's shoulders relaxed and she leaned forward. "What's with the new wheels?"
"We kind of broke the old one," Jonathan said. "She was getting sort of long in the tooth anyway."
Irene chuckled. "That monstrous Hummer was a girl?" Jonathan let it pass. He wasn't sure why, but all vehicles were females in his mind. "And a Suburban?" Irene pressed, needling him further. "How very Washington." She kicked his foot with hers. "Oh, come on, smile."
He did. The decision to let the old Batmobile go instead of paying for repairs had been a tough one. Then, once the decision was made in principle, sifting through the choices was a painful process. In the end, there were better choices for armored vehicles, but it was the ubiquity of the Suburban that drove the choice. Finding one of many black Chevys on the road was a hell of a lot harder than finding the one exotic alternative.
"On to business," Irene said. "After I spoke to Dom on the phone..." Jonathan's hand shot up. This was not a venue for using real names. Irene looked confused at first, but then got it. "No worries," she said. She pointed to the opaque screen behind Jonathan's head. "We are totally soundproofed back here now. I don't always learn my lessons quickly, but I do learn them well." Irene had made the mistake of trusting her previous security detail with information that nearly got Jonathan and his team killed. Actually, she hadn't trusted them with the information so much as she had failed to safeguard it as aggressively as she should have. "Dom told me that children were involved in that business on the roadway, but that now they are missing, a priest and a social worker too, though it seems we're presuming the adults to be dead due to physical evidence at the scene."
"Exactly," Jonathan said. "I was hoping you could..."
"I can't," she interrupted.
"Excuse me?"
"I can't launch an independent search for people whose status is born of rumor rather than evidence." Jonathan recoiled. This was not what he'd expected.
"Jesus, Irene, this is me you're talking to. I'm not some network reporter with a bag full of rumors."
"I understand that, Dig, but you have no legal standing in this."
"They were coming to Resurrection House. I pay for Resurrection House. That gives me legal standing."
"No, it doesn't. It gives you emotional standing, maybe, but that's it."
Irene's posture, tone, and demeanor were the very definition of businesslike. 100% emotionally disconnected. Jonathan opened his mouth to object, but she wouldn't let him.
"Let me ask you this," she said. "Did you see those boys, either at the foster home or in the car?"
"Of course not, but..."
"Did anyone see any evidence at the scene that the boys were there?"
"Jesus, Irene, this isn't a courtroom."
"Answer the question."
"You know the answer to the question." "No, I was not there, but we know..."
"We suspect."
Jonathan's jaw dropped. He didn't get this at all. She wasn't just being uncooperative. She was actively fighting him.
"What's gotten into you?"
Did you know that the people who allegedly had custody of the boys have no record of them ever being there? Irene fired the question like a punch, and it hit the mark. Jonathan gaped.
I don't understand.
Dom told me that the first stop for young Ryder and Jeffrey was a foster family out near West Virginia.
Right, Jonathan agreed. They wouldn't answer their phone.
They answered for my team, Irene said. They told us they had no record of the boys ever arriving there.
That's what the second place said, too, Jonathan remembered.
Irene crossed her legs, folded her hands on her knee. Look at this from my point of view, she said. You want me to find children who no one has seen on the presumption that they were kidnapped from a place they'd never been. There's not much here to work with.
But you talked to Dom. He wouldn't make this stuff up.
Irene's shoulders drooped. Come on, Scorpion. I don't have agents sitting around with nothing to do. Everyone is assigned to important tasks. When a jurisdiction asks for our help, we try to be there for them, but largely in a secondary role. Where there is a hard suspicion of a federal crime, we're all over it, and the locals are secondary.
Kidnapping is a federal crime, Jonathan reminded.
Not when there's no kidnapping, Irene said. Her frustration was growing. My people reached out to the locals and to the state police, and they were told that there was no suspicion of kidnapping. I'm sorry, Dig, but that's where it is. She broke eye contact and reached for a folder. The meeting was over. Or so she thought.
What was that?
Jonathan asked. She scowled.
You showed your tell, he said. You have an eye tick when you're bluffing.
She piffed and gave a look that questioned his sanity.
We've known each other for a long time, Wolfie. I know what I see, and you know that I'm right.
This isn't a card game, Digger.
Life is a card game. What aren't you telling me?
We are done here, Dig.
Why don't you want to find the Kendall kids?
He was playing a hunch here, pressing his suspicion as fact to get a reaction. Irene rewarded him with another tick. He moved before she could speak, holding up his hand to silence her.
Wait, he said. I get that there's stuff going on in the world that I don't have a need to know. If this is one of those times, that's fine. Don't tell me what I don't have the right to know.
He leaned forward to make his next point.
But do me the honor of not lying to me.
Irene's eyes flashed anger, but then her expression softened, and she put her reading glasses back on. Have a good day, Agent Bonner. Feel free to submit your field reports to me directly, but through secure channels. Jonathan hesitated. He knew that she'd just delivered a subliminal message to him, but he wasn't sure what he'd received. It's not complicated, Agent Bonner, she said. The second reference to his alias was not lost on him. The field office SACs might get confused by your efforts.
I understand, Madam Director, he said, and he reached out to shake her hand.
I prefer Wolfie when there are no witnesses, she said.
How'd it go?
Boxers asked as Jonathan settled in and fastened his seatbelt.
We're off to the home of Judith and Henry Ballantyne, Jonathan said. You have the address?
Already programmed in, Boxers replied. I figure about 5.5 hours, but I thought I'd wait till Wolverine's motorcade left before I headed out. Are you ignoring my question?
Not ignoring it, Jonathan said. Just trying to come up with an answer. Wolfie came up with a list of reasons why she couldn't start a search for the Kendall boys. Jurisdictional mumbo-jumbo. I'm not buying it.
What aren't you buying? Gale asked.
The rationale behind her decision not to look for them.
Oh, come on, Dig,
Boxer said.
He pulled out onto Braddock Road on his way to the Beltway on a long drive.
One house won't answer their phone, and the other one says the kids were never there. What do you want her to do? I'm as loyal to the cause as anyone can be, and it feels flimsy to me, too.
There's something else in play, Jonathan said. I don't know what it is, but I saw it in Wolfie's face. There's another reason why she's not looking for them.
Why would she need another reason not to look for something that's not out there to be found?
Big Guy pressed.
We're not talking about finding a lost pair of shoes, Jonathan said, more loudly than he wanted. These are two kids who have no one sticking up for them.
Don't get mad at me, boss,
Boxer said.
We're going wherever you want us to go, but I get it if the FBI is hesitant to go along. Have you got a conspiracy theory baking somewhere in your brain?
There are no such things as coincidences, Jonathan said.
He couldn't think of a more succinct way of putting it.
The car was shot up, and Father Tim, Pam Hastings, and the kids are all missing. Blood spatter indicates that the adults in the car were killed. Jesus, what more do people need?
Maybe they hadn't yet gotten to the children, Gale suggested. Maybe this hit had nothing to do with Ryder and Jeffrey Kendall.
A hit on Father Tim?
Boxers asked.
The driver, Gale said. What do we know about her? I've only met her once or twice, and she seemed nice enough, but what ex-cop doesn't have enemies?
But they're missing, Jonathan said yet again. Yeah, maybe the adults are dead. Hell, maybe they're all dead. But until somebody finds bodies, they're just missing and they need to be found.
And I'm not arguing with you, Gale said, returning the same tone of frustration. I'm just saying that I understand where Irene is coming from. Her hands are tied.
Jonathan decided to stop sharing his concerns about Wolverine. Since he couldn't articulate exactly what he was thinking, it wasn't worth pursuing anyway.
She did sort of unofficially deputize us, he said.
Oh, God,
Boxers groaned.
What does that mean?
I'm not sure. But when we were parting, she called me Agent Bonner and emphasized that I should report my field reports only to her.
Those were her words? Gale asked. Report our field reports?
Her words,
Jonathan confirmed. He didn't add that the phrasing only doubled down on his feelings that a conspiracy was in play. After time passed, maybe a minute, Gale said,
There's got to be a record. I mean, we know that their mother was arrested, which means that someone knows where the children were taken as she was driven away.
The Ballantines, Jonathan said. We got that from Dom.
Let's just put it out there, Boxer said. Do you think the point of the hit on Father Tim's car was to steal the kids?
Absolutely,
Jonathan said.
So stipulated, Gale said. From here on out, we all agree that Ryder and Jeffrey Kendall were kidnapped. Who would do that, and why?
Colonel Mustard in the library with a candlestick,
Boxer said.
How the hell are we supposed to know that?
Kidnappings only happen for a few reasons, Jonathan said, reciting information they already knew. I think we can scratch sexual violence off the list. At least that's what I choose to do. That leaves only revenge, leverage, or ransom.
Is ransom even in play?
Big Guy asked.
Who are they going to squeeze money from? Daddy's dead and Mommy's in jail.
What was the mother charged with?
Gale asked.
I don't know the exact charge, Jonathan admitted. Something drug-related.
As he heard the words, he understood the stakes. Boxers beat him to the punchline.
So the kids were kidnapped to keep her quiet.
Whoa, Gale said. Let's not leap too far on conclusions. That's one motivation, but not necessarily the motivation.
It walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, Jonathan said. I'm not sure it matters if we're right or wrong. But if we're right, it could be good news for the boys. And if they're being used for leverage against their mother, then they have to be kept alive.
God only knows what condition they're in, Boxer said, or how they're being treated.